I'm Jane Johnson, and you're listening to the Careering into Motherhood podcast. My guest today is Renee Germain, the author of a new book called Black and Great, The Essential Workplace Toolkit. This is her first book and was based on a popular blog that she ran for the Black community in the workplace. It highlights the achievements and issues within the community. She was featured in Metro and invited to write for the Huffington Post, and now regularly contributes to a number of publications. If you haven't read this book, you must. No matter what your background or the racial community where you live, it's intelligent, thoughtful, and educational. And most of all, it's inspiring. Inspiring for all of us to do better. Renee, welcome to the Careering into Motherhood podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited.
The fact that you'd published your book, it came up on LinkedIn. And so I had a little rummage around on LinkedIn and I saw that you also went to the school where the back of my house looks over every single day. So I'm currently recording this, sitting looking at your old school playing field.
Love that. Yeah, literally. Obviously, Sheen School, I know it's now Richmond Park Academy. Definitely some of the best years of my life there. Like, really thoroughly enjoyed secondary school, going to Sheen. So when you reached out, I was like, oh my God, I rarely meet people that like have that kind of Sheen connection. It doesn't really happen. I was like, I was buzzing.
No one knows where Sheen is as well. It's this kind of little microcosm zone of London that's not on the tube. So it's a real coincidence. And I know, obviously, because I sit and look at the kids every day, it's actually a really diverse community that attends that school. Were you living in the local area?
I wasn't. And that's a really good point. So I, at the time, was living in West London in Shepherd's Bush. To be fair, most of my friendship group, apart from one person, we all lived in, like, I would say West London, South London. So I think that was probably, for me, I think one of the best things about going to Sheen, which was that it was really diverse and I got to like connect with people from all over London, basically.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a few friends that lived in the local area, which was, again, for me, was eye-opening because I lived in my like little West London bubble. I wasn't familiar with Sheen. And so having friends that lived in a local area opened me up to being familiar with Sheen, Richmond, Mortlake area, places that I just wouldn't generally like come to.
Before we give people the idea that actually Sheen is this real cosmopolitan diverse area, it's not. It's awful that it isn't. I mean, you'll know, Renee, it is predominantly white. You know, it is not very diverse. So personally, I love having this school here. I think the kids and everything are amazing. So after school, where did you go? Talk us through your career.
So after leaving Sheen, I went to Coombe Sixth Form. It's an area called New Malden. So again, not particularly diverse, but again, I wanted to go to a sixth form. I wanted to go somewhere where the classes were smaller, where I'd probably have like just a little bit more interaction with my teachers and things. And so that was a bit of a, I don't think a brave decision, but I think a lot of the people that went to my school, they tended to all go to like Richmond College, which was great. And, you know, it was a way to continue, I guess, that kind of Sheen and that closeness and take it to college. And it was a bit risky for me at the time because everyone was going to Richmond and I was like, I want to go to Coombe. And my family were like, where the hell's that? And it was quite far. Again, Coombe's in New Malden, Surrey. I lived in West London, Shepherd's Bush. And yeah, I remember when my mom came with me to visit, she was like, wow, this is like a whole different world. First you had us going to Sheen, now you've got us going to Surrey. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I did A-levels in Spanish, English literature and language, media studies and business studies. Really good experience. I did those four. I applied for university, but I decided to take a gap year.
And what did you do during your gap year?
I really wanted to, at that time, work in the music industry, like not as a performer, but like behind the scenes, kind of in like artist management. So I took the time to get some work experience in the music industry and even in TV. So I did a work experience placement at Channel 4. And again, all my friends went to uni that year. And I remember someone in my family was like, if you don't go to university now, you're never going to go. You're going to get too comfortable. And I also had a retail job at the time just so I could earn a bit of money and save. But I was adamant. Like, I always knew I was going to go to university. I think I just wanted to do a few things beforehand that would put me ahead. And I thought, if I can do this experience now and then go to university, I'm going to step into uni with a CV, with things already that I knew a lot of my peers wouldn't really have.
Where do you get your drive from? Because for someone so young to think like that, I mean, God, when I was 16, 17 or 18, I was just thinking, where can I have my next, you know, fun party? Yet you're thinking about your CV and your career and your future. Where did that come from?
I've always had like really kind of supportive family and people that have always kind of encouraged me. I think being a Black female, I knew very early on that I wouldn't necessarily have the same opportunities as other people. And so that meant that I couldn't just come in and have like almost like a blank canvas and just be like, cool, I'm going to start from zero like everybody else. I thought a lot of people are going to be starting from maybe 5, 6, 7 because they've got, whether it's family connections and things like this that are going for them. And I didn't have that. And so I thought, in order for me to be on par, I might have to do what might appear to some people as taking a step back and not going to uni when everyone else was. But it benefited me greatly. I remember when I got to, I think, my first and second year of uni and everyone starts applying for internships and things and people start worrying about the experience they have and they don't have. I was confident because I took that gap year that I already had things I could talk to. So I think it was a couple of things. It was having a really encouraging family and just feeling like as a Black female, I needed to do a little bit more than everybody else.
You must have talked about this with your friends and your peers. Do you think that not all Black women, but a lot of Black women feel that weight? I need to be that bit extra. I need to go that extra mile because I feel that I will be, or I know I will be disadvantaged if I just do what I see everyone else doing.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's Black women, Black men. I think there's this kind of saying within our community of like having to work twice as hard as your non-Black peers. And I think within our community, like a lot of people feel like I can't just do the bare minimum. I can't be mediocre like some of our other peers that could be mediocre and get all these opportunities. Like we have to be the best. And so I think that kind of mindset, it stays with you a little bit. And I think for me, and even now, my whole thing is just never leave things to chance. Never assume that, you know, oh, because you've worked hard or you've done this, it means that the opportunity is going to happen. It's actually just do that little bit more that will just get you a little bit further. And in fact, it just reminds me when I was in school, I remember we're learning our times tables. And I think at school, our teachers taught us up to 10. And I remember my parents teaching me 11 and 12 times tables. And I was like, we don't learn that in school. Like, no one cares. Like, please, I just want to play with my toys. And they were like, no, you know those timetables that no one else knows, or you'd get your spelling list. And then my parents would give me a couple more spellings. And I was like, these are really hard. No one's going to ask me this. And they were like, no, you know those extra complicated words that no one else is going to know. So yeah, it definitely is. I can think about childhood and how that relates.
I don't know whether to be really sad by that or in awe of you and your family and your parents because of what you did. I guess there's a bit of both.
Yeah.
So you took your gap year, you worked, you got more experience, then you went off to university. How was that?
Going to Loughborough University, again, I think definitely one of the best like decisions I've ever made. It was nerve-wracking for me because I think I touched upon, I've always been in my little bubble of living in West London, whether it was my parents or my grandma. And so going outside of London, not like to a big city like a Manchester or Birmingham, but Loughborough is like a little town. So really different, but loved it. Really eye-opening, exposed me to so many different people, people that I could learn from. And yeah, I studied international business. It was 4 years of 1 year in industry. Yeah, great degree and a great opportunity just to learn like just about life. I remember the people I lived with when I like started university, they all were like really well-traveled and they'd had all these experiences. And I was thinking, I want to be like that. And so, yeah, it was cool.
After leaving university, talk us through your career. I don't want to.
When I was in university, I think the interest I had to work in the music industry, which is why I took my year out, it kind of faded a bit. I think I knew, okay, I'm still interested in it, but I thought this is something that I like versus something I want to do as a career. And I remember a friend's mum said to me, have you thought about going into banking? And I was like, I hadn't actually, like, hadn't really thought about it. And she was like, why don't you try some banking internships? And so I think in my second year of university, I started to apply for some of the investment bank internship programs. And I did a week at Credit Suisse, which is like a European investment bank in Canary Wharf. And then when it was my year in industry, I wasn't really thinking about banking then. And then I heard a conversation in the library and these girls were talking about applying for Goldman Sachs. And they made it sound like it was like the scariest thing you could ever do. And they were really daunted by it. And I literally...
You thought that's the thing for me?
Yeah, I was just like, it's just a company, it can't be that bad. And so I went on the website and it was like the final day of application. So I applied for it and I didn't have any like massive expectations. And then I got an interview. And then as I started to go through the interview process, I was like, oh, wow, like, this is kind of happening. Like, I think I'm, you know, I'm going to get this job at Goldman Sachs, which is huge. I did a 1 year work placement there and then finished that 2 weeks later to the internship for summer at Barclays. So it was a really busy summer. I got two job offers from Barclays and Goldman Sachs, graduated university and went back to Goldman Sachs.
So you graduated with two job offers. I mean, that just doesn't happen these days. It didn't happen when I was at university, let alone now.
It definitely helps when you're in your final year and you don't have to worry about where am I going to go once I graduated. It was like a nice feeling of knowing as long as I get this grade, I've got these.
You're so humble. You're so humble. It was a nice feeling. Like you had an offer. You'd set yourself these goals. You had an offer from, you know, the gold standard of banking. And, you know, not only are you a woman, you're a black woman as well in the world of investment banking. Let's just have a minute here to just appreciate what you've done. You're just like, yeah, you know, I had a job offer.
It took a while to sink in just because because it's not a world I was familiar with. I didn't know people in it. It was really strange. There's other people saying to me, like, you know that it's going to be a lot of hard work and long hours. And that was when it kind of sunk in, because before that, I remember like everyone in my family kept mispronouncing it. That was also humbling as well, going home and you're telling your family about it and they're like, what's that? Like, never heard of it. And then the penny finally drops and they're like, oh, I told a friend and I heard that Goldman Sachs. So that was interesting. But no, like that was like my first kind of path into financial services. And that was, I think, when you just touched upon, and it's probably now I know it's not just financial services, but it's just realizing how the workplace can be very different for Black and minority employees. And so obviously I was experiencing certain things, but also I was witnessing it to other people who have obviously had far longer careers than I had. And that was when I think in my first 2 years of being in the workplace, I just started to blog on Medium. Yeah, so I was just blogging things. And a lot of it was like how to stand out during your internship. And I think my first article was how to be your authentic self in the workplace. I used to get all kinds of students reaching out, but I noticed that particularly I was getting a lot of Black students reach out. And they would ask me questions or they would ask me to talk a little bit more about certain things. And that was when I started to kind of realize no one's really talking about this a lot. And it's awkward, right? Because being very honest, my employees could find my blog online. So like, and there was nothing that I didn't say that was anything bad, but I get why people may sometimes shy away from talking about these things because there's a bit of fear of what happens if my colleagues find out or my manager finds out. But yeah, I wasn't like shading my workplace. I was just talking about the things I'd learned and how to help other people.
Why is it that you think that you weren't fearful, I guess in inverted commas, of it being discovered by your workplace? Because even if you're being respectful and so on, I know myself just from days in large corporates as well, where, you know, you're almost scared to take much of an active presence on LinkedIn because there is this sense that once you get that corporate job, you just need to blend in with everyone else, which of course is part of the problems that we then find we have. Also, someone so young, you thought, actually, I have a voice, I'm going to use it.
If my employees at the time took an issue with it, then that's just not a company I'd want to work for. And that's how I had to think about it. And maybe that's really naive, right? And I'm coming from a situation where it's not like I had like a massive backup plan if my employees was happy or I had tons of money to sit back on. Like it was a bit risky, but I also just felt like, not like I had a duty, but I wanted to be honest. And I knew there was a lot of people that were in my shoes that were struggling with a lot of the issues I was with around being authentic, how to deal with workplace politics, how to like survive and thrive in an internship, you know, even addressing things. Like I wrote a blog around the problem with how Black History Month is celebrated in workplaces. Again, I just always wanted to be honest and I always wanted to help other people. And I felt like if I worked for a company that took an issue with that, that company probably wasn't for me.
It's brave, but it's also, you know, you're clearly purpose driven in everything that you do. What I marvel at is your book. I've got it right here. I'm just looking at it now. The top it says, For Us, By Us. And I latched onto it because I feel so passionately that obviously you've written it for the Black community, but I also want everyone to read it because I feel a bit choked up just talking about some of the experiences I've read in your book, and especially your last chapter, you talk about the experiences that people have had in the workplace. As I was reading your book, a lot of the things I identified with as a woman in the workplace, I think, well, you know, you could apply that similar thing to what I've experienced and I know other women have experienced. But then when I get to that last chapter, you just realise, no, we haven't experienced that. That's why I feel so passionately, Eb, that, okay, you've written it for the Black community, but we all need to read it. You've managed to write something which is not preachy. It doesn't feel angry. I'm sure some of the contributors and so on, there is anger there. There should be anger there. But it's educational and helpful. You've kept your own experiences out of it, which I think is really admirable. I don't know how you've done that.
I picked and chose when I wanted to inject my own experiences and not just because I never want to impose my stories and experiences as being like the way it is for everybody else. And I think I mentioned in the book, there are going to be some Black people that are going to read it and just be like, I can't relate. Like, this isn't my story. I've managed to have a career and thrive. And that's okay, right? That's not a bad thing. But I never wanted to have an experience and be like, and this is like the benchmark. This is how it is everywhere. There were some places where I was like, I'm going to share my experience. I think it's helpful. And other times I was like, I'm not. And I think I have such an amazing set of contributors. It was easy for me to kind of take a step back and allow them to talk to certain topics just because I've only been in the workplace for like 6-7 years. They've got decades of experience. They can talk to things that I probably haven't even yet experienced. And so I was really, really fortunate in that sense. I had other people to talk as well. You make a really good point. I was like, I want everyone to read Black and Great. Obviously, when I was writing it at the forefront, I was thinking about the Black community because we've never had any literature before that spoke directly to us. But equally, I think everyone can learn from it. It's insightful.
Definitely. I think if you are in the workplace anywhere, you have to go and read this book. You just have to, because it changes your perspective on everything. It changes your perspective on hiring processes. It changes your perspective on every campaign that companies run internally or externally. Now I need to ask you, because you've got such a range of contributors, how on earth, and as you say, you know, you've only been in the workplace kind of 6 years, but you've got everyone from Trevor Nelson to surgeon. You've got such a broad range of people. Did you literally just write to them and go, hello, I'm writing a book on this. Would you contribute?
Literally, like that was how it happened. And in terms of this part of the process, in terms of getting the contributors, I think that was probably one of like the biggest learning curves for me, because I'm somebody that's, I wouldn't say shy, but I always have this thing about reaching out to people and them just thinking, who are you? Bye. Like, not when it's just for me. So I had this like massive spreadsheet of people that I had just thought of, people that I have been connected with on LinkedIn, but maybe haven't spoken. And I reached out to people on LinkedIn. I followed people on social media and I just became a stalker. That like, I was stalking Twitter conversations and looking for where they would leave their email, social media bios.
Oh, you went straight in there with the email.
Yeah, I went with the email, social media bios. I was stalking for hours on talent management websites for some more of the people that are in like, you know, film, music, TV. And I literally just emailed agents. I emailed people directly. I reached out on LinkedIn. Interestingly, at the time, it was just an idea. So I was just reaching out being like, hey, my name's Renee. Have an idea for a book. And I wanted to know if you want to contribute. And what I really loved and what I'm still touched by is that most of my contributors, I would say like 90% of them committed to contributing when I didn't have a publishing deal, when I didn't even have a book, when I couldn't tell them that there would be other high profile people in it. They just wanted to be part of it because they believed in it. I know sometimes we all say like, you know, just ask, but really just ask. Like, the worst people can say is no. And some people said yes, and then it changed to no. Some people said no, but so many people said yes. And like, it just taught me a lot about, you know, not being scared of shooting your shot, really just asking people and being able to sell your vision. Like, I was able to pitch what I was trying to do, even though I didn't have anything at that time, bar, you know, just some notes and like maybe like a Word document that I was like developing. And they all wanted to be part of it.
Oh, well done. Honestly, Renee, it's absolutely amazing. And no spoiler alerts here, but you've got some fantastic contributors. They do give a very different perspective. Of course, there's a common thread, but I find it incredible that you just wrote to them and you had this sort of vision of what you wanted to create and you've done it. Can I ask about the publishing process? Because as a woman writing a book, and obviously you hadn't written before, you're from a banking, not from a writing background, not from journalism or anything. How was that?
Do you know what? That was like super interesting and insightful. So obviously when I started writing the book, I was planning to publish it independently. And that's just because I thought that's how people publish books.
You mean like self-publish?
Yeah, self-publish. And I thought that's how people generally put out a book. So I remember someone reached out to me because I used to share like the fact I was working on a book on Twitter and LinkedIn just to let people know this is what I'm doing and hopefully to garner some interest.
And we should mention that you'd done this all alongside the same time as working and getting promoted.
Yeah, like I was getting up at like 6 a.m. working on the book, logging into work and then doing some more afterwards. But I was working on it and someone reached out to me on LinkedIn and was like, would you like to get your book published? And I was like, I am getting it published. I'm self-publishing it. I was like, what? And they were like, no, do you want a publishing house to actually publish your book? And I was like, like, tell me more. And they were like, well, I know a lady who's recently just left a publishing house who's going to become a literary agent. And I think I would connect you. So they connected me to my agent, Natalie, who's awesome. We met up and I showed her. I'd already started putting my book together in Adobe InDesign. And so when I met up with her, I bought my laptop and I showed her and I was like, and this is the book cover and this is the and she couldn't believe that I'd already started putting something together. So I showed her what I had. She gave me some suggestions and said, this is what we can do to improve it. And then she was like, we need to get a proposal put together, which you go out to publishers with. And it's basically, I would say, it's like one or two draft chapters of your book. And I would say 10 to 12 slides about yourself, your book idea, and why you think your book would make sense for your particular audience. And we worked on that probably for like a year.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a really long process of really getting it perfect. And at the time, I can honestly say I was getting so frustrated because I was like, I was going to self-publish this book and it would have been out already. Every single time I would send her the deck, she'd be like, no, this needs to change, that needs to change. It was so tedious. But I totally get it now in terms of why it needed to be perfect in the way it was. So by the time we did submit it, it did actually garner quite a bit of interest. And then she called me on my birthday and was just like, these are the publishers that are interested and you know, let's decide which one. So that was great.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. And I think also the publication date, I don't know if this was planned, but it was perfect because it was just the end of lockdown. People were getting back into workplaces.
It changed a few times. I think it was meant to be August at one point, then it moved to April, and then it moved to May the 12th, which was really special to me because it was my grandma's birthday. And my grandma passed away like a few years ago, and she's who I dedicated my book to, massively inspired me to write the book. So everything kind of worked out in the end.
Oh, it's such a great story. How have you felt about the response? Have you been surprised by the response to it? What's next?
I was so nervous. I think I was particularly anxious as well, just because my book has a really bold title that some people might not take a liking to. It's a lot. Just even like my own kind of insecurities as a writer, you're just nervous about how it's going to come across. But the response was really, really good. Like I had people just adding me and reaching out to me on social media, being like, oh my God, I feel seen. I feel heard. I went to schools and school kids that are like, 13, 14 years old were like, oh my God, like, you know, we never talk about stuff like this at school. And finally we're talking about it. And that for me meant everything. I just wanted to write something that people felt like they could relate to. And even like having non-Black people, white people, Asian people reach out and be like, I've read your book and I'm like, I'm learning, I'm understanding from it. Or I could relate to similar things because of being a woman or being minority, that was equally like super touching because there are aspects of our experiences which are very similar. I'm also a woman, so there's certain things that I can, when I was writing, I was like, this is very much something I know a lot of women can relate to. And in terms of, I guess, what's next, this is gonna sound so boring, but I think at the moment, I'm enjoying just reading again. I think for so long, I've just been reading my own manuscripts to the point where you just get tired of it. So at the moment, I've been spending my evening just taking in other books, taking in other authors. And again, just to improve my own writing style for when I want to write again. I'd also love to try working with other mediums. Like when I was younger, I used to write dramatic monologues. I used to write poems. And so I'd love to play around with, you know, maybe writing something like a poem or writing a play and just flex my skills there. Equally, I'm just listening. Like, I think when people feedback about the book, I'm just like, so what do you think needs to happen next? And, you know, I'm trying to, you know, connect with companies and trying to connect with individuals and say, hey, like, how can we come get together with our respective knowledge and skills and communicate to, you know, wider corporations and audiences what we think sometimes needs to happen, you know? So yeah, definitely a few things like that.
You work for American Express at the moment, don't you?
Not anymore, but they were, my manager and my team were very supportive. I wasn't planning on telling them just because I was so nervous, and it was something outside of work. And somebody said to me on Instagram, actually, someone was like, oh, like, have you got compliance sign-off on your book? And I was like, no. And they were like, you know, you might want to tell your workplace compliance about it because it's a book about the workplace. They might have a few questions. So I got all of that signed off, and they actually didn't even look at the book, to be fair. I offered them, you know, I said, I can send you the manuscript, and they were all good. And then I remember I was like, okay, I got to tell my manager and my director. And both of them were like buzzing. Literally, my manager, Alex, was like, oh my God, send Michelle Obama your book.
Did you?
I didn't. I don't know.
Oh, come on.
I get Michelle Obama's address. I'll send it to her. She was like, pushing my book. So like literally on the last day, she pushed it in all our work Slack channels. On LinkedIn, my director was also super supportive. So like massive shout out to them. And even in my new workplace now, I've had one or two people be like, I'm listening to the audio of your book. And yeah, it's nice. It's a nice feeling.
Well, Renee, I can't wait to see what Renee does next. Thank you ever so much for coming on the podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you for having me. This is like my first podcast since the book launch. I've literally really enjoyed this. And yeah, thank you so much again, Jane.
What an incredible, awesome, utterly amazing woman. If I had achieved half of what Renee has done when I was her age, I can't promise I'd have taken it all in my stride the way she has. Please, please go out and buy her book and buy one for a friend or your manager while you're at it. It's written for the Black community, as Renee mentioned, but it's also incredibly relevant for everyone. If you happen to have Michelle Obama's contact details as well, please send her a copy. Thanks for listening. I'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another guest to explore the subject of women in work.